Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Listerine's revolutionary new mouthwash. Thumbtacks, whiskey, and acid. The perfect elixir to both freshen your breath and make you sound like Christian Bale's Batman all at once. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome to MacGuffin Men. I'm Alex. With me is James.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, James. How's it going?
Good. You want to talk this time? Usually you hate banter.
Well, you know, I'm pretty cheery today. I happen to be talking about a film that is near and dear to my heart.
I know. With the case of the movie staring at me.
Yeah, just to inspire us.
Anyway, now that we've teased you for long enough, I'm going to tease you a bit longer. did you ever watch Mystery Science Theater 3000?
I've seen a couple, yeah.
Did you like it?
I mean, sure. You know, I like parts.
Okay. Well, when that show, and well, the premise of the show, for people who don't know, is kind of a bunch of characters watch usually B-movies, sci-fi movies, and kind of just riff on it.
Yeah, yeah. And like the frame is generally like, you don't you see like silhouettes in a movie theater?
Yeah, it's
or something?
Like you're in a movie theater behind the characters. Yeah, so it's like an audio commentary, but an audio commentary making fun of the movie the whole time, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that show stopped and in 1999, and Michael J. Nelson, one of the big guys from it, kind of continued this with this idea and came out with this concept called Riff Tracks. Have you heard of this?
No.
Pretty much the same thing, but without the Mystery Science characters. But again, like an audio commentary where they're just making fun of it. And I think it launched in either 2006 or 2007. And you can, you know, you just download this MP3 and then you play it along with the movie.
Uh-huh.
And the first movie that they chose to do, because they said it was the cheesiest movie ever made and the most fun to riff on, was our topic this week, Roadhouse.
I want to listen to that so badly.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of it, but it sounds good. Oh. But yeah, they were very eager to do this idea, and when they kind of got it all together, they said, it's Roadhouse. There's no doubt in their minds, it sounds like.
Yeah, the people that have seen Roadhouse know what they're dealing with. You know?
Yeah. So yeah, this week we're going to be talking about Roadhouse.
Yes!
You sound like me for the Die Hard podcast.
Yeah, basically.
1989 film.
Yes.
Not movie. Yep. Not a flick.
No.
A film.
It's a film that you see at a cinema.
A work.
It's a piece.
A magnum opus. Yeah, a piece. Starring Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze.
Directed by Rowdy Harrington.
Who has the best director name as far as, like, your movie. Like, who has a better name that corresponds with the movie, that the best movie they've directed?
No, you know you're in for a good time. Yeah.
When the guy's first name is Rowdy. It's not even Rowdy Roddy Piper. It's just Rowdy Harrington.
Yeah, and it's not like Rod, quote, Rowdy Harrington. No, straight up Rowdy Harrington. As we said, starring Patrick Swayze, Kelly Lynch.
Yes.
The inimitable Kelly Lynch. Who plays the love interest. Mm-hmm. Ben Gazzara playing our villain.
Who I love.
Sam Elliott.
Yes.
Who you also love.
Oh, God. We love Sam Elliott.
Probably more legitimately than Ben Gazzara.
Yeah, we're very pro-Sam Elliott here at the MacGuffin Men, I think.
And Jeff Healy.
Yep, and Kevin Tai, you can't forget about him.
I don't know who that is.
He's the guy that runs the Double Deuce.
Oh, Darren Gillum. Of course.
Yeah, who kind of looks like an old fat Darren Gillum from SNL.
Yeah, and I guess you'd call it an action.
Yes, I think that is how it was defined when it was made. However, the language of cinema is adaptive, and it is now a comedy.
That's true. The tagline for the movie is, it's last call. For action. So engines. I guess it's an action movie.
Yeah. So let's run through the real gem of this movie, which is the concept. a concept that could only become created in the 80s. And that was clearly come up. People that came up with this were very, very high.
On cocaine.
A lot of cocaine.
This
like
isn't
Tony
like
Montana amounts of cocaine.
Yeah, this isn't a stoner idea. This is a coke-fueled nightmare idea.
I just had this dream.
It was terrible, but let's make it into a movie.
this guy goes across the country to recruit a bouncer and bring him down to the Double Deuce. Yeah, the bar is called the Double Deuce.
Yeah. And, well, first, they seem to make a distinction that he's a cooler, yeah, not a bouncer.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, is that what the William H. Macy movie from like 2006 was about?
I don't think so. But I mean, I've tried to find the difference between these terms. I guess the cooler is kind of in charge, mm-hmm, of everybody, but also a cooler has a more positive connotation. Mm-hmm. A bouncer sometimes is more pejorative. It's kind of these meatheads who just want to fight. But as we learn from Dalton, Patrick Swayze's character, it's better to be nice.
It is. It's one of his rules.
And talk. And mm-hmm, I mean, you know, he does prove throughout this movie that he can kick ass, but he mm-hmm tries to avoid physical confrontation where possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of the philosophy of Dalton.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the first things we see is when we're introduced to him at the first bar he's working at, before he goes to Kansas City, like around Kansas City where the Double Deuce is.
I think it's Missouri.
Okay.
And then all someone right said Texas, but I'm sticking with Missouri.
I like the idea that it's anywhere. I like that there's no defined
it's
location.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, there we go.
It speaks to
it's
all
our
of
backyard.
Us.
Yeah. In the first bar, like the first thing we see, Dalton basically, like, he goes to break up a fight. Someone tries to, like, cut him. Well, somebody does cut him with a knife. And then he's like, all right, let's go outside. And then they go outside to presume – Dalton goes outside to presumably fight these guys. And then he just leaves them and goes back in.
Yeah.
Seven, quote-unquote, seven dwarves are what the guys who wanted to fight him called these bouncers that just sort of line up and they're just not letting him back in. But
yeah, so
– he didn't have to smash any tables or anything.
Yeah, and he doesn't take it personally, which is something that you'll see reoccurring.
No. Nothing gets to Swayze.
So yeah, he's working as a cooler in a bar in New York City.
Yeah.
And then Taron Killam, who I will refer to him as Taron Killam for the rest of the podcast.
We can't do that. What's his name?
Anyway, Tillman.
Tillman, yeah.
Tillman kind of is a bit of a bouncer headhunter, it seems.
Yeah.
Across a couple states to find the best in the business.
Yeah, he's inherited some money, and yeah, he wants to make a good living for himself.
Yeah, so he's going to renovate this dive of a bar that he has in Missouri, mm-hmm, Kansas, Texas, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And he wants the best of the best, so he goes to find Dalton.
Isn't Kansas City in Missouri? Isn't there a Kansas, Missouri?
Oh, yeah, that thing. Yeah. Kansas City, Kansas/Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
yeah.
So when he gets Dalton, he tells him that he wants the best in the business, but Dalton says Wade Garrett's the best in the business.
He does.
Yeah. He's a very, modest gentleman.
Yeah, yeah.
Showing and respect, I mean, him, to an old friend.
Him and Wade are friends, so yeah, it makes sense.
But anyway, he says he'd rather have, Tillman says he'd rather have Dalton. Mm-hmm. He writes him a big check, promises him more money when he gets there.
Yep.
Dalton quits on the spot.
Well, yeah, and Dalton calls out his terms. Dalton's
yeah,
like,
that's true.
$5,000 up front or something, $500 a night. You pay all medical expenses. You know, it's like, and the big guy's like, I can agree to that. And he's got a plane ticket ready for Dalton. Dalton's like, I don't fly. Too risky.
Awesome.
Yeah.
He's the John Madden of coolers, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And he's off. He's off to his new home.
Yep.
He's going to be working at the Double Deuce, which, as we said, is a very rough dive bar. There's fights there all the time.
It's the type of place where they clean up the eyeballs after closing or sweep up the eyeballs.
Yeah.
Which is very extreme.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Yes. And we know, we get a glimpse of it before he announces that he'll be working there. He kind of mm-hmm just goes there one time and
yeah,
sees it's a very violent bar.
Yeah.
People are throwing bottles at the band led by Jeff Healey.
Yes.
Whose name is Elvis in this one? What's his name?
No, it's not actually Elvis. That's just what the guy calls him later. His name's something with a C. Cody. Yeah.
And again, another old friend of Dalt from work in the bar circuit, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. Did you just call him Dalt for short?
Dalt and Dalton. Jeff Healey, of course, the blind guitar blues player.
Yes. He has since passed.
Yes. Yeah. Super talented, though. Mm. And, you know, they talk a little bit, catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dalton kind of makes it known that he'll be working and running the show here.
Yeah.
And what's his kind of first thing that he does?
Well, he sort of cleans out some of the riffraff, cleans out or fires a woman who was selling drugs, fires a guy that doesn't have the right temperament for the job, played by Hito Turkoglu.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, there's just sort of clean house. And then his first night, I mean, he ends up firing some more people because he sees more things that he doesn't like.
Yeah, the bartender skimming some money out of the cash register. Mm-hmm. This one kind of comes back to bite him in the ass a little bit because he's connected to who?
Brad Wesley,
who runs this town.
Oh, yeah. And you can tell by all the scarves he wears. Yeah. People that wear that many scarves are always in power.
Yeah. And so he's kind of a, I don't even know what to call him.
Like, I don't know.
His
role
in this town. He runs it.
Yeah, he runs it. He brought the 7-Eleven here. He brought the JCPenney's coming to town because of me. Like, it's just, I don't know.
He doesn't have, I mean, he's not in political power. He's not in office, it seems.
No. I think he's just sort of like a mafia because he charges people protection.
Yeah, he's just
like
a big businessman. And yeah, he's an extortionist and he's got a bunch of muscle. And I guess you could call it. Yeah. And yeah, he just tries to blackmail people and extort them for protection money and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, the bartender that Dalton fires is in with him. So that becomes a problem. Hmm. And this is where things start getting bad for Dalton and the Double Deuce.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Dalton's cleaning things up. You know, we get a little while where he's cleaning things up. He meets his lady and they go to the... He has to get his stitches fixed by, I don't know, Foxy Doctor or whatever.
Doc.
Yeah. And by the way, Dalton carries his own medical records around with him at all times.
All the time.
Which is amazing. And when he gets stabbed, he gets asked, how did this happen? He gets asked, how does this happen? And he says, natural causes. Which is another winning line. Anyway, yeah. And then things start to go awry. And
I guess we should talk about his living quarters as well.
Yes, above a farm.
Yeah. Before he leaves New York, he sells his car to buy another car.
He gives away his car.
Yeah, gives
drives another car that was just in a garage and then buys another car. And, you know, I think his BMW or Mercedes or whatever is his traveling car.
Right.
You know, like he only uses that for long mileage.
And he buys a new car and buys new tires because he knows that he, being the way Dalton is, will get his tires slashed constantly.
Yes.
But yeah, he finds a farmer who is willing to rent a room to him.
Yeah. Who initially looks like he has hooks for hands, but it's just because he's like moving hay.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. And yeah, he moves there and he finds that he's neighbors with Mafia McGee, whatever.
Yeah, we don't need to look it up.
Yeah, and so, as we said, he's, you know, not the most popular guy at the bar. Tillman likes him because he gets things done.
Yes.
But kind of some of the employees and some of the customers of the bar aren't so big on him. Mm-hmm. Again, after some of his car problems, as a result of him firing people and, in their idea, mistreating people at the bar, gets his tire slashed and a break through his windshield. So he has to go buy new tires at the auto shop. He goes to Red Webster's auto shop, and that's when Dalton starts to get an idea of just what
kind of racket this Mafia McGee is running.
Exactly. And, you know, just how involved he is with everybody and all the extortion that he gets up to. Yeah, what else?
I don't know. That's the thing. It's a really basic, simple movie, and it's just sort of like these two warring type of, like, bosses, kind of, you know, like Mafia McGee is just sort of warring on Tillman constantly, and Tillman's just, like, I don't know, they're really good at opposites, I find.
Yeah,
like,
Tillman kind of just refuses to, you know, play along.
Yeah.
Same with eventually the man that, Red Webster, the guy that he bought the tires from.
Mm-hmm.
Also says that he doesn't want to give in and pay the extortion rates because they keep going up and up. And in revenge, he has his auto shop blown up.
Yeah. Yeah, and an extremely large explosion.
Yes.
There was a lot of explosions there. And that sort of really sets off things. Like, things really get kicked up into high gear after that. And possibly my favorite scene in the movie is when they go to the auto dealership.
Yeah.
And Mafia McGee just decides he's going to have somebody drive a giant monster truck through an auto dealership.
Yeah, through the plate glass windows,
all over the cars.
In front of so many people, too.
So many people.
Like, a crowd has gathered, and Brad Wesley's just laughing, yeah, and very clearly has orchestrated this.
And then the best is after it's gone through the entire building, all the cars, he just sort of stands out in front of it and, like, holds his arms out, like, what? You know, like, yeah, he does, like, a shrug. It's amazing.
It's the equivalent of a mic drop at the, yeah, end of, like, a sick verse, but he just doesn't have a mic. And I know part of being, like, an extortionist is to intimidate people, but you don't invite the whole town when you intimidate one business. I don't think that's how that works, but it seems to work for Brad Wesley.
You gotta let people know who they're dealing with.
Yeah. And so, I mean, in between, we've probably skipped a bunch of face-offs between, oh, yeah, Brad Wesley and Dalton.
And the way Wesley's holding back any sort of liquor getting to the Double Deuce.
Yeah, exactly.
That's sort of a mini problem.
Yeah, and, you know, again, he's kind of got his hands in every business, so he's stopping liquor from getting to the Double Deuce. Mm-hmm. We also kind of skipped over Wade Garrett coming to town.
Mm-hmm.
Because when things are getting pretty bad with all these businesses blowing up and being monster trucked,
yeah,
Dalton feels he needs some backup, so, yeah, he calls Wade Garrett.
Yes.
Played by
the incomparable Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
The man with the greatest voice of all time.
I think so.
Yeah. He also often has a killer mustache.
Yeah.
Not in this film.
Yeah, but I know. It's kind of sad we don't get it in this one.
Yeah. But his hair in this movie is awesome.
It makes up for, yeah, it. And we get more Sam Elliott face, which we don't, yes, get a lot of in other movies. Yeah. So.
And he's got a rocking ponytail at times.
So. Yeah. So Wade's in town. He,
yes,
teams up with Dalton,
yes,
trying to protect the Double Deuce and take down Brad Wesley.
Mm-hmm. And they're all—I mean—they're also good friends. So, you know, it's sort of a visit type thing as well.
Yeah. And then there's the attack on the farm where Dalton lives too.
Yeah, yeah. Which is another one of my favorite moments because this is after the explosion and fire.
Yeah.
Or sorry, at the auto shop, and which, by the way, was a huge building.
Did you ever, pretty big.
Yeah, it seemed bigger than it needed to be, especially given the amount of space of that building we ever see, like,
yeah,
in the interior.
And it appears to be a relatively small town.
Yeah. Oh, that, like the Double Deuce and that and Brad Wesley's house is all we see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The attack on Dalton's farm. It's another great moment because Doc is starting to get worried about Dalton, you know, getting killed with all this craziness that's going on in this town.
Standing up to Brad Wesley.
Yeah.
Like only Dalton would do.
Yeah. And then, and they're having an argument and Doc is like, but what about you? Or something like that. And like screaming at him, you got to protect yourself. And just as she screams, what about you? The farm in the background explodes.
Yeah. And, another very large explosion.
Yeah. Sending Dalton straight out the window in the daintiest way possible. And, he's just floats down to into the house to basically save the old man that he kind of lives with, you know, like,
yeah,
who he rents from, and then tackle the guy on a motorcycle that was sort of in charge of the explosion, who's, yeah, driving away like, ha, 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 ha.
One of Brad Wesley's lead henchmen.
Yes, who earlier showed how good he is at gymnastics when he sort of pole vaulted using a pool cue and did a backflip onto a stage.
Yeah.
And then immediately hops off.
Yeah, he's kind of like the second last boss in the Roadhouse video game.
Yeah, exactly. But he never really, he's never defined in any sort of way. Yeah. Like, it always seems like Hito Turkoglu should be more of a villain towards the end, you know? Like, and,
yeah.
And it's just like this guy with the earring comes in at one point. It's like, okay, this guy, I,
yeah,
guess.
He seems to be the most, he's like the evil version of Dalton. He's like small and fit and gymnastic-y.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That's his deal.
Okay,
I got you. He's the evil version of Dalton.
Yeah, and I guess that makes sense because then the fight that they have after this, after Dalton flies through the air and tackles him off his motorcycle,
yeah,
stop him from getting away, they have this fight on sort of, not like a beach because I guess it's not a beach, but, you know, lakeside.
Yeah.
It's a really long fight. And
yeah,
it's just like a martial arts fight and, you know, they exchange jabs vocally and physically.
Yeah.
And Dalton always just comes back with something like, you're an asshole or something like that. Like something really weird and like not offensive at all.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a diss, I
yeah,
guess.
And yeah, this fight culminates
with Dalton, who this is built to. This is sort of like you show a gun in the first act, you gotta bring it back for the third.
Yeah.
Dalton has apparently killed a guy with his bare hands by ripping his throat out. Speaking from what I've seen with my eyes, Dalton has done this because he proceeds to rip this guy's throat out.
Yeah, he really does.
Yeah. And Doc does not care for this action.
No.
She comes flying through. No!
Well, as a medical doctor, I think she knows how deadly a throat rip can be.
Except that she double checks to make sure he's dead.
So he dies from a throat rip.
And
that's what the coroner's report said.
Yeah.
The autopsy, death from throat rip. He throws his body in the lake or river that separates the farmland from Brad Wesley.
Brad Wesley, sorry. And convenient placement at this point because Dalton basically just screams at Brad Wesley, like, this is a sign, you know? Like, and Dalton, like, throughout this movie, we have to talk about how weird Dalton pronounces a lot of things. Like,
yeah, like what?
The way he just says, like, I think it's time for you to leave, you know, like the way he says stuff like that is just so funny.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who talks like that. No, nobody.
It's not an accent. It's just a weird way to
speak. It's just the way he speaks. And yeah. I love it. And I don't know. It's like, it was like listening to Nelly or something in, like 2000. You never knew how he was going to say his words. It was always entertaining. You know? It would always catch you kind of off guard.
So after, evil Dalton dies, mm-hmm. Our next murder victim is Wait, Garrett.
Oh, it was Tails. Ben Wesley calls, Brad Wesley?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Brad Wesley calls Dalton at the Double Deuce and basically threatens I'm going to kill Doc or I'm going to kill Wade Garrett. Now, excuse me while I flip this coin and figure out which one I'm going to kill. And they actually show him with no cuts. Like, his takes is a really long take.
Set the phone down.
Pull out a coin and then flip it and then be like, or something, and then hang up the phone.
Yeah.
And then,
too bad you don't know what it is.
Yeah. And then later, Wade Garrett walks into the bar. He's been beaten up. Dalton leaves. I forget where Dalton goes to.
I think Dalton assumes that since Wade Garrett's not dead, that he's off to kill Doc. So Dalton goes to pretend Doc, goes to defend Doc. Mm-hmm. And then when he comes back to the bar, Wade Garrett's still there with a knife in him.
And a note that says it was Tails.
Yeah, and so this is revenge for, you know, not bowing like everybody else does to Brad Wesley's power and for killing, I think the guy's name is Jimmy, the guy that he throat rips.
Yeah, there's definitely somebody named Jimmy in this movie.
I think it's him.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with it.
Yeah, and so that's the revenge. And, you know, he really wants Dalton out of this town. Even right before Wade Garrett dies, he's trying to convince Dalton to just leave town and that, you know, this isn't his fight or whatever. But he's gone too far when he's killed Wade Garrett.
Oh, God, absolutely. I'd lose my mind. Yeah. I'd be like, that is Wade Garrett.
Yeah. Where are you going to
get
his voice?
Have you heard his voice?
And then,
his voice sounds like whiskey, you know, like it's just amazing.
And so this is kind of the last straw for Dalton. Mm-hmm. And it's time to hit him where it hurts.
Oh, yeah.
Attack Brad Wesley at his estate.
Yeah. He immediately drives his
traveling car.
His Benz. He drives his Benz over. And, like, for a very long time, we watched this Benz go, straight into this house and through, like, the fence and
over a ramp.
Yeah. Brad Wesley's guys are just sort of shooting at this car, and it goes over a ramp, which is just very conveniently placed. Yeah. We don't actually see the ramp, but it's clear there is a ramp there.
Yep.
And the car explodes in midair because it's being shot. And then we find out he's not actually in the car.
What? And where is he?
And he's in the house. Yeah. He's in Brad Wesley's house.
Using the knife that killed Wade Garrett, I believe.
Uh-huh, to propel the car.
Yeah, he holds down the gas pedal.
And the guy who did kill Wade Garrett is like, oh, the knife. And then takes the knife out of the car and instantly just puts it into the holster like that he has for his knife. Like, it's just, I don't know how Dalton knew that specific guy would be right there and still have the holster for the knife. He's presumably never getting back.
And so Dalton goes on a bit of a rampage.
Oh, yeah. He kills a lot of people.
Through the Wesley estate.
Yep.
Kills all his cronies.
Kills Hugh.
Oh, not all of them. He spares that guy. Yeah. I don't know if he intended to, but
Well, you know, he knocks the polar bear onto him.
Fat guy lives.
Yeah.
And so after this, it's showdown time.
Yeah, and we're in sort of this this room with a lot of taxidermy on the walls.
Yeah, he calls it his trophy room.
His trophy room, yeah. And then Brad Wesley says, the only thing missing is your ass. Like, another great pronunciation. Brad Wesley is very good at this stuff as well.
Yeah, and it's showdown time between what's been determined as the biggest badass in apparently the world.
A throat ripper.
Versus a 70-year-old scarf-wearing businessman.
With a six shooter.
So it should be simple, but oh no.
No. Oh, and I think Dalton gets the upper hand on him pretty quickly. And then it's like...
And then it's unarmed 70-year-old man versus Dalton in his prime at his angriest.
At his daintiest and angriest. I think does he go for like the, you know, he fake out with the throat rip. Or no, they fight and then there's the spear.
They fight for a while, there's the spear.
Brad Wesley picks up a spear that he has in his spear vase or whatever that is. Because there's multiple of them. And he just throws a bullet of a spear at Dalton, who dodges it, obviously.
Yeah.
And and then he tries to fight him with another spear.
Yeah.
And it's basically like, I don't know, and Dalton just breaks it in half. You know, it's like, this is not a threat.
Kicks him in the knee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
but the fight goes on for way longer than it should by any reason, even with the weapon.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And, and then, you know, Dalton knocks the six shooter out of the guy's hand onto the couch, Wesley's hand onto the couch. And then we get some like really comically Hitchcockian music as Dalton is sort of like, he's got his like arm up in the air. Like, is he going to do another throat rip?
Yeah. He's priming for the throat rip. He's got the hillbilly death claw in one hand. Yeah. he's on top of Wesley here, and it really looks like it could be the end.
Yeah.
But kind of maybe his softer side gets the better of him for
a moment. Yeah, and Sexy Doctor.
And then Sexy Doc shows up, and Dalton knows how she feels about this kind of stuff.
And the Hitchcock music continues to go for so long.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, is he really going to do it? Is he not? And, like, at this point, we all know he's not going to do it. You know, we know Dalton's rules, and, you know, he doesn't mess around when he's going to throat strike somebody. You know, he's going to make it happen quick.
Yeah.
And so he gets up, and he just turns away from this terrible person who has a gun right next to him.
Yeah.
Just walks away to Sexy Doctor. And then another one of my favorite moments, somebody just walks in with a shotgun and shoots Brad Wesley as Brad Wesley, because, you know, he obviously goes for the gun and turns to shoot Dalton. Doc goes, no! And then Brad Wesley gets shot with a shotgun and doesn't fall over. He's like, oh. He like recalibrates, you know, and then like points the gun again, and then he gets shot by another dude with a shotgun.
Yep.
And then another dude with a shotgun. Yep. And then once more by Tillman, and then he falls through the table. And it's like Tillman, the guy that run the auto shop, the old farmer. I feel like there's one other guy.
There are
only three people.
Yeah, there's the car dealership that gets monster trucked, and then Red Webster's place that gets blown up is like an auto parts and supplies store.
Yeah.
So they're both car dudes, but different car dudes who look similar.
And then they drag his corpse out into the front of the house and just drive over it with a monster truck for 20 minutes.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
It should. That's the only thing that is, like, the only ludicrous possibility that could have happened in this movie that they don't do. Like, this movie tackles everything, like, from Patrick Swayze's ridiculous salute wave that he does with his whole hand, like... God, everything about this movie is spectacular.
So what actually happens at this point is the police, who apparently exist in this town.
Yeah, this is the first time we see
of all these explosions and monster truckings and fights and murders. This is the first time we see the fact that police are existed in this town.
Yeah.
And several of them show up and say what happened. And everybody says...
Nobody saw it.
I didn't see anything. So... It sounds like no one's ever going to testify against the people who killed him, and this looks like it's the end of Brad Wesley's reign of terror.
Regime, and it's sort of like, it's basically like the Janine Garofalo line in Mystery Men, where it's like, oh, he fell through a table onto some bullets.
Exactly. You
know, it's basically that, except the cops clearly know this dude just got shot by four different people.
Yeah.
And Dalton has also recently murdered about 10 others.
outside. And,
that's the end of the movie,
The denouement, wrap it up with some wet mullet in the water makeout.
Yeah, and then they, like, go underwater, and that's the last we see of them. They could be dead. They could have drowned.
But we assume happily ever after.
Yeah.
For Dalton and Doc.
Yeah,
and
they live together under the sea forever.
In the town of Jasper, Missouri. Good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the movie.
Oh God, I love this movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a Western in disguise, right?
Is it? Well, I guess yeah. It's sort of like the small like town.
You hire the lone gunslinger who comes to town to take down the guy who's bullying the whole town.
Yeah, no, that's true.
It's totally I can see that. I mean, it's got Sam Elliott in it.
Yes,
it must be a Western. Yep. Yeah, kind of like he's the quiet dude who doesn't say much. Dalton. Yeah, yeah. I saw him compared to The Man with No Name.
Yeah.
Also referred to, Dalton is also referred to as the mullet with one name, because we never get a first name or last name for Dalton, whatever. His name is just Dalton, apparently.
That's spectacular.
And you said that this was the best Seagal movie Seagal never made.
Basically, yeah. And it's just like, yeah, and I was saying to this, saying to you about this, like, if I saw this movie when I was 12, when me and my my friend Kevin would watch, like, Seagal movies and just lose our mind laughing, I think I would have died. Yeah. Like, I would have laughed so hard that I would have just exploded. Like, the first time I saw this movie, I was, it was maybe 2 years ago or something, and I was watching it by myself, and I just, like, was convulsing. So, it's just, it's thing after thing after thing, and everything is absurd. Just, and every time, like, nothing absurd is happening. You just think about, well, the concept of the movie that this guy traveled cross-country to pick up a cooler, the best cooler in the business, pre-internet age. This is not like a ratemybouncer.com type of thing. And it's just like, he's like, oh, I know exactly who number one and number two best coolers are in the business. Like, what? What is it? Where are the trade papers for this? I'm so confused.
So what makes it a Seagal movie?
Well, I guess it's just that it's absurd. It's totally absurd. And I mean, actually, the last showdown at Brad Wesley's house is kind of reminiscent of sort of an attack on the ranch in Hard to Kill.
Yeah.
It's sort of like flipped, but because it's a house that Seagal's staying at to recover from his coma. But there is even like the and I think these movies might have even come out in the same year. But there's the chase in a car that just sort of keeps going and finds a magic ramp and all this stuff. Like, it's really similar.
And, like, the lone badass.
Yeah, exactly.
A group of people from some criminal overlord.
Absurd and action, often involving pool cues.
Yeah. Non-existent or corrupt cops.
Bar fights is a Seagal textbook thing.
Yeah. And you're a big Seagal fan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about the appeal of Seagal movies, or the appeal of something like Roadhouse, or even just the concept of, like, a bad good movie, good bad movie?
I think it's sort of the idea that, and I mean, like, I've been watching movies because they're, you know, unintentionally bad for a long time, you know, like, since I was young, like, really young. And I think the only idea, like, I don't really put a lot of thought into it. It's just sort of like, I just want to laugh, and it's... I think the idea is so many people put so much time into this. You're basically laughing at people and like who have wasted their time, who think they're making something or trying. Like Seagal movies, they're trying. I don't know what the mentality was in Roadhouse. I think they had to have known something. Like Patrick Swayze never seemed like a dumb guy. I don't know.
Yeah, but... Yeah. 80s,
but it was 80s the 80s. Action. That's the thing. Yeah. It was the 80s. So they might have thought they were doing something really cool. And, well, I guess they are, but maybe not in the way they thought. And I think it's just sort of like the tone of this movie wants so badly to be something, but it's just not. Like, you're just so, so off base from what you think you are to what I am experiencing this as. And, you know, like, I mean, I love comically bad Oscar movies, you know, like any time when Meryl Streep's like, just throwing out a big accent or something, you know, I just find that funny because it's ridiculous, but it's, I don't know. I think, yeah, it's just sort of like your intentions were, you tried something and failed so, so badly.
Yeah.
And I'll never meet you. So I'm just going to laugh at this.
Okay. So this is kind of a two-pronged question. Mm-hmm. When in your life did you start watching movies for this reason? Like you knew they were bad. You could get value from a movie that you knew wasn't a good movie.
Yeah.
And when did this kind of start culturally? Because I feel right now, you know, hipster movement, there's a lot of ironic appreciation and like, mm-hmm. Oh, this mustache, I'm not really growing this mustache. Oh, it's on my face, yes, but like, I don't mean it. I don't mean this mustache, you know? Like, where did that ironic detachment start? Because I don't think they were doing it, you know, when cinema was invented. I don't think people go to the theaters and like the 1910s and be like, oh, this one's so bad, bully, rah. Like, but, and then, you know, it's, I think it happened at some point. Were people watching movies like this in the 80s thinking that, oh, it's so bad, it's good? Or when do you think that happened? Because I think there's a lot more, you know, sarcastic appreciation of movies now. I just want to know how far back you think that went, and what age in your life or in most people's life do you think that they can watch a movie like that?
Well, I think I got an early jump on it, just because, you know, my friend and I just sort of enjoyed watching ridiculous things. And just when we saw Hard to Kill for the first time, it was just like, yeah, we're going to watch a lot of Seagal movies now. And like I said, I was about probably 12 or 13 or something like that. And so, I mean, like 2000 at the latest was when I started doing this. And yeah, I really don't know how far it goes back. I've absolutely seen an increase in it, but I mean, The Room came out in 2003 and it was kind of a thing less than 2 years after that, I think. So,
yeah. And I mean, Mystery Science Theater, I think was 1989. Yeah, so it had to have come at least before that.
Yeah. It's just sort of something that's existed for a while. And I mean, the 80s was a great decade for things to watch.
Because it seems so self-important and so serious, which I think might be a really good jumping off point for the irony movement, I guess, like to watch something like that.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. It was like the 80s took itself really seriously, and that's why it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and why in retrospect it's really easy to laugh at.
Yeah.
Roger Ebert's review of this movie, 2.5 stars.
Nice.
Yeah. Which kind of threw me off, and then I read his review, and he said, Roadhouse exists right on the edge between good bad movie and the merely bad. I hesitate to recommend it because so much of it depends on the ironic vision of the viewer. This is not a good movie, but viewed in the right frame of mind, it is not a boring one either.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. It sums it up well.
Yeah, but I think it's, you know, he hits the nail on the head. It's tough to recommend because, you know, everyone's tastes are so personal, and when it comes to appreciating a movie in this sense, like, if you're not watching it in this way, you're going to hate it. You're just going to miss it so much.
Oddly enough, this might be one of the most recommended movies in my life. Like,
well, and that's another thing I wanted to bring up. I kind of missed this. Like, when you said let's do a Roadhouse podcast, I was kind of like, do people know this? Like, is this something, I mean, we did our Assassination of Jesse James one.
Yeah.
We can be self-indulgent sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to make sure someone would care about this. And then researching it, yeah, it had a huge resurgence lately, and that's totally a thing.
Yeah. I miss Roadhouse. Like I said, I didn't see it till like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was a thing long before I ever saw it. I always knew it existed, but I always just sort of wrote it off. It was like Patrick Swayze bouncer, but little did I know.
And I mean, as we said in the intro, Riff Tracks, like it was the first one they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess there'd been years of build up till that point.
Mm-hmm.
Sequel, direct-to-video sequel, came out in 2006.
Starring Jonathan Skeech, or whatever that guy from That Thing You Do that nobody likes.
And, Family Guy did an episode where Peter just roundhouse kicks people and says Roadhouse after every time.
That's awesome.
So, I'm not sure what year that was, but it must have been sometime in the past 10 years, so it's been going. And, The deluxe edition of Roadhouse that you and I were watching.
Yes.
One of the special features is Kevin Smith doing an audio commentary of it.
I've listened to part of that, actually.
Yeah, and just what happened was, in I forget which movie, but for one
Kevin Smith and Scott Mosher. Scott Mosher always misses out on the Kevin Smith credit. You know.
But yeah, Kevin Smith doing a commentary for one of his own films mentioned something about Roadhouse and how much he liked it. And so when, I guess it was gathering more steam that they wanted to do the sequel and the deluxe re-release, they approached him to do a commentary. I guess speaking of special features, do you want to mention,
what would Dalton do?
What would Dalton do?
It was just all of these, like, ridiculous, like, it's basically, questions that they ask bouncers or coolers, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're interviewing these people and it's like, this happens. What would Dalton do? And one of these guys takes all of these things extremely seriously and it's just amazing. And I mean, it can't even be described. I looked for it on YouTube and I couldn't find it. So we can't even post it. But call me. I'll lend you the DVD.
And or if anybody has the re-release edition, look under special features. It's a wonderful, like, low budget featurette.
Oh, God. If they spent $10 on this, I'd be surprised. Like, I don't even know. I think they borrowed a camera from a friend. Like, yeah, it's the deluxe edition of Roadhouse, and it's in your DVD bargain bin. Like, you'll be able to find this for $5, absolutely.
Yeah. I guess I should talk about Dalton a bit.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, we have been, but...
And the Tao of Swayze.
Yeah, and I totally missed out on this movie. And watching it and researching it, I realized I totally missed out on Swayze.
Mm-hmm. And well, I don't think there's a lot of Swayze.
There isn't a lot. I looked over his filmography. Even in the 80s, which is prime time Swayze, he was doing one, maybe two movies a year.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he started in TV, and Dirty Dancing, of course, was his big kind of breakthrough.
Don't forget the PBR commercial he did. I don't know if you saw that.
That is getting posted.
Oh, yeah. His hair just, oh, my God, it just bounces.
I watched that whole thing today. Yeah, but he's not in a lot of stuff, but I totally missed it. I realized the only thing I've seen him in is Donnie Darko,
which
he doesn't have a huge part in.
Nope.
And his SNL bit with Chris Farley as Chippendale dancers. And I didn't watch Dirty Dancing, and I just haven't seen much else. And you kind of think he's just a very interesting action star.
I think he's an interesting action star. And I mean, the thing with Swayze and why he's resonated so much is he wasn't in a lot, I guess. But the things he was in were fairly iconic. Like he's got Dirty Dancing and Ghost. Like Dirty Dancing and Ghost separately have iconic scenes.
Yeah.
And they both have Swayze in them. And Dirty Dancing has an iconic line spoken by Swayze. Like, don't put baby in a corner. And
did you know Dirty Dancing was released in theaters it was supposed to be one weekend and then go to video, and then it was a huge hit and they just capped it out.
Really?
Like they had no faith in this movie.
I didn't know that.
And it was the first first movie to sell 1 million copies on like home units.
Yeah. People love Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, it's still going. But anyway, continue. Sorry.
Yeah, and well, I mean the Zooey Deschanel show is based around her loving Dirty Dancing. Like that's one of her three things as her character. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And also Roadhouse, like this is clearly third on the list by a wide margin, but I tend to loop Point Break in with it because it's the same type of thing. But yeah, he's not known for a lot, but the things when people know him for these things, they just love them, you know? And the thing I like about Patrick Swayze as the action hero is that he's a totally unique action hero. And, you haven't seen Point Break, right?
No.
Okay. Well, that's another movie that is, it has a little bit more legitimacy to it, but I mean, saying something has a little bit more legitimacy than Roadhouse is not a huge compliment.
No.
But yeah, you should totally watch Point Break. We'll probably do a podcast on Point Break at some point. Anyways, the Swayze is sort of like this philosophical action hero. And
yeah, and this, he's got a degree from NYU in philosophy.
In philosophy, yeah. And he, like, it's kind of funny, the one time he's sort of self-deprecating is when he's like, oh, the meaning of life, that sort of shit, you know, like, and another great pronunciation, but yeah, and it's sort of like the idea is he's the thoughtful action hero who doesn't really want to use his skills, but and part of it comes from he's a small guy and he's like, I probably weigh more than him, you know?
Yeah,
and
throughout the movie they're always saying, I expect you to be bigger.
Yeah, I thought you'd be bigger, yeah.
Yeah, he's somewhere between 5'8 and 5'10.
Really?
That's the numbers I was seeing. I thought it'd be even smaller than that.
Oh yeah, I would guess shorter than that.
But yeah, I tried a couple places, and pretty much every answer I found was ranging between 5'8 and 5'10.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely fit. He's in great shape, but he's not jacked.
No, he's
not
a small guy,
big dude.
He's like a small guy who just does a ton of sit-ups and push-ups and stuff.
Yeah, he's like a Bruce Lee, like small build, but just probably great like workout regimen.
Yeah, exactly.
Tons of training.
And he's just kind of graceful in a way that action stars rarely are, you know?
Yeah, well, he's the daughter of a dancer. He grew up doing ballet and gymnastics and then some, like, theater in school. But yeah, absolutely, he's graceful. He's kind of, and you see it with his kind of gymnastic stuff, his Tai Chi stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, he does have a very
good... Which, by the way, I think that scene in Hot Rod is riffing on that Roadhouse Tai Chi scene.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I totally missed that because I hadn't seen it beforehand. Yeah. But he's a very different action star. And I mean, this is around the time of Die Hard, which we talked about, John McClane being a different kind of action character.
Yep.
But this is even different than that. It's not just that he's not jacked. He's like a smooth, graceful...
Yeah, and I mean, he is a less... I mean, John McClane isn't super realistic, but he's less realistic than John McClane in that Dalton does some pretty fantastical things in this movie.
Yeah.
but yeah, no, it is certainly a step away from the sort of Schwarzenegger, Stallone type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he's not Cobra. He doesn't just kill everything and nothing hurts him. You know, we see him get multiple knife wounds and...
Pain don't hurt.
Yeah. but yeah, no, he was kind of different. And I don't miss this type of action hero. You know, it's not like I'm dying for another Swayze to come along and be a philosophical action hero. But I mean, it's cool that it exists.
Yeah, and it's just, as you said, kind of a backlash. Well, not a backlash, but like a juxtaposition to the Schwarzeneggers and yeah, the Stallones, exactly. Right? Another exposure that I had to Swayze was through rap lyrics.
Oh, yeah. Ghost like Swayze.
Yeah. And I found a good list of, like, probably not all of them, but many of the famous rappers who have used Ghost like Swayze or I'm Swayze to mean I'm Ghost, which means just to be gone or to disappear.
It's not because he's dead. This has been a long going time.
That Notorious B.I.G.
Yeah.
Who I call Biggie. Yeah. And Tupac. Tons of people have used it. Method Man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, that's one of the most repeatedly used phrases in rap, I think.
Which is awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Legacy will continue.
Oh, yeah. I've always been curious to know who first said that, but,
yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Speaking of 80s action, we had a brief discussion about the knife fights in this movie.
Yep. Yeah, knife fights in the 80s were far more prevalent, and, I mean, I think the peak of it was... And I mentioned this to you earlier, is the climax of Under Siege, which is sort of Tommy Lee Jones and Steven Seagal in a control room of whatever the giant ship that they're on. What's a big ass naval ship called? It's like a warship type of thing. And
like an aircraft
carrier? It wasn't an aircraft carrier, I don't think, but that type of
battleship.
Thing. Battleship? Yeah. Yeah. Probably battleship. And they're just having a knife fight in the control room, and it's kind of cool. You know, I feel like a good knife fight could be done now, but they don't happen very often anymore. No, it was really sort of like an 80s, early 90s thing. And then remember that movie The Hunted with Tommy Lee Jones and Benicio del Toro? There's a climactic knife fight in that movie.
I never saw it.
Of like a throwback type of thing.
I never saw it, but I just remember seeing knives in every poster and commercial. So that was,
a Rambo type of guy in that he would stalk his prey in the jungle or something. And there was a knife fight at the end.
But, cool. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say? Before we get to activity time?
No, I just... Well, I mean, if you say we're going to activity time, I just want to get to activity time.
All right. I think I have four activities today.
That's awesome.
None of them are lightning round, though. We've been leaning pretty hard on the lightning round lately.
Now we've done it two times.
Has it only been two? Yeah, I guess it has been.
I just get really excited and talk about them for weeks, so you feel like there's more.
Okay, so this one is called... The Battle of the Throat Attacks, and it's where we compare the throat strikes from Taken to the throat rips from Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. Which do you think is superior off the get-go? Just initial impressions on the two.
I mean, I got to give it to Liam Neeson just for, sheer repetition. Like, he just goes for it and goes for it. And then it's like, oh, is that another throat? I'm going to strike it real quick.
Yeah.
And, we only see one throat rip from Swayze.
Yeah, we almost see one, and we hear about one.
Exactly. And Liam Neeson never balked on doing a goddamn throat strike.
He doesn't give you throat strike blue balls the way Dalton does.
No. There's no Hitchcockian music. There's no time for music when Liam Neeson's around. He's just striking people in the throat. And... there's something to be said about that, and I respect a guy who sees evil in a throat and just strikes it out.
Okay, so Liam Neeson and Taken, it's got sheer numbers.
Yeah, oh god, yeah. Nobody has struck more throats than Liam Neeson and Taken.
Okay, what about the effectiveness, though? Because the throat strikes probably just make them unconscious, or down them for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be pretty precise with those, and I think his whole special forces background, I think he knows... precisely whether or not he's killing or knocking these people. But we never really find out.
Throat rips are straight up deadly.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, as far as the excitement I get out of them, I get more excited about a throat strike than I do a throat rip.
Yeah.
Like, Swayze, it's just it's just gross. You could have killed him any other way. Like, why would you rip his throat out with your bare hands? And
that's the most ballin' ass shit you can do.
Whereas Liam Neeson, I've seen Taken three times, I think, and every time he strikes the throat, I just get excited,
The next category I want to look at was stealth.
Okay.
I think this one goes to Liam Neeson as well.
Yeah.
Because it silences them. I don't know. In Roadhouse, they seem to kind of gargle and scream until they die.
And then there's also the doctor being like, no! screaming after. And then Dalton screaming at Brad Wesley. There's not a lot of stealth involved in this throat rip.
And there's blood everywhere.
Yes,
so there's the sound and the visuals.
Yeah.
The one thing, what about intimidation, though?
Yeah, I think the intimidation, you have to go for throat rip. Nobody wants their throat ripped out.
No.
Whereas I kind of want Liam Neeson to strike me in the throat.
And if you see someone get throat's struck, you're like, I could still maybe take this guy.
Yeah.
But if you see someone get their throat ripped out,
I could not take Liam Neeson.
I know, but some of the people in Taken see it happen and they still go for him. No one sees a throat rip. But I guess, yeah, I think so. It sounds like overall, Liam Neeson's going to take it.
Oh, yeah. Liam Neeson's background is just, I mean, you just can't mess with it. Like, that's that speech that he gives after his daughter gets kidnapped when he's talking to the kidnapper for the first time. Like,
yeah,
you got to be a cold man to say things like that. So he's very sure of himself. In a fight, Liam Neeson absolutely wins. And he's totally got the size thing. Like, Liam Neeson's like 6'4". Yeah. You know, so.
And Qui-Gon Jinn.
Qui-Gon Jinn in like 8 different movies.
Yeah. All right, so Liam Neeson comes out on top.
I think so.
This has been Battle of the Throat Attacks. The second one.
We should call those Taiwanese animators like that do the news stories or something to give us a mock up of this fight.
Okay. Or what's it? World's Deadliest Warrior or whatever. Liam Neeson versus Dalton.
Screw samurais versus Vikings. Liam Neeson versus Dalton.
Some good visuals there. The second activity I haven't decided on the title of.
Okay, well, we'll decide a title later.
Well, I've got two up in the air. Okay. It's either How Gay Is This Movie or Is This Movie Gayer Than Top Gun?
I think, like, I haven't seen enough of Top Gun to really, really know whether or not Roadhouse is gayer, but yes.
It is.
Yeah.
Because on the gay side, we have Play Something With Balls. Yes.
Which I have actually started saying to my, to anything that I want to play music, like iPod, play something with balls.
But the way he says balls, it doesn't sound like play something with, like, oomph. It actually sounds like testicles. Yeah. He's trying to get
make sure
at.
There are testicles hanging from the song.
As you said, the only thing missing is your ass.
Yeah.
Or your ass.
In the trophy room, no less.
Exactly.
And just the idea of sort of like Brad Wesley and Tillman sort of like warring together. And it's sort of like they're, because Brad Wesley tries to woo Swayze or Dalton away. True. And it's sort of like these two competing lovers. It's like a love triangle. And the whole I thought you'd be bigger thing. People say that to him constantly. It's just like a dick contest. Like, it's amazing. This movie, just so many things. And just the way Tillman looks at anybody is like... Oh, and the way he sort of summons Dalton to his office. There's just a lot of I think unintentional, probably, but...
Yeah,
and... Because there was just a lot of this in the
80s. Yeah, on the hetero side, there are plenty of boobs in this movie.
There are lots of boobs. That girl who's kind of always wants to go nipple to nipple with Dalton, which, by the way, is kind of a line in the movie. Like, someone asked her to go nipple to nipple with him, and... she's kind of foxy. Like, she's, like, textbook 80s hot, I think. Yeah. Like, she's super good looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, there are plenty of boobs in this film. Okay. I think I can think of 8 off the top of my head.
8 boobs or 8 pairs of boobs?
No, 4 pairs.
Okay. All right. So we'll call this one a tie just because you haven't seen Top Gun recently enough.
Yeah, but just the beach volleyball scene, I mean, I think in Top Gun, I think that it... Yeah, we'll go with tie.
Okay. Yeah. My third activity...
Yeah.
It's called Cult Movie Commandments.
Okay. Be nice. Is that one of them?
Well, when I was young and people would talk about...
Expect the unexpected.
Another good pronunciation. Yeah. No, when I was kind of younger and I didn't know as much about movies, I always heard cult movies and I thought of it like movies people literally based religions around.
Yeah.
Like, they took it that seriously. So I was trying to think of some...
So like how we treat The Rock.
Yes. So I was trying to think of some commandments that if you were to base a religion on... Roadhouse, what kind of commandments they would have. You already got my first one. Thou shalt be nice until it's time to not be nice. I love it. Do you have any? I've got some.
No, okay. No, I want to hear all of these.
All those who don't follow the word of Dalton shall be smited by throat rip.
Nice. Like it.
And instead of church going, the Sabbath will be celebrated with shirtless, oiled up Tai Chi sessions.
I love it. Also, all music must have balls.
Yes. All church music must have balls. All right. And for my last activity, which is one that we can actually, I think we're going to use over and over.
Okay, wicked. I love continuing features.
Continuing reoccurring activities is the 2011 reboot, which is if we were to cast this movie right now for the reboot, who do you want playing who?
Oh my God, that's tough.
I know. And it is because it's such a weird movie because you don't want like Andy Samberg or someone funny. Like, you want to take this seriously.
No, it has to be made seriously.
It needs to be sincere.
You can't 21 Jump Street Roadhouse.
So if you want to, I mean, you consider actors or even directors if there's someone that you specifically want. I've got some ideas here. You can tell me what you think.
Uh-huh.
For Dalton, I had three people.
Okay.
Tom Cruise, Mark Wahlberg, Taylor Lautner.
Taylor Lautner is the best.
I think that's the best, right? Yeah.
Because Tom Cruise is too old.
And might see the humor in it.
Yeah, now he's too, so, like, he went too crazy and now he's self-aware. So, like, he knows what's going on. And, I mean, he could have played Dalton in the
80s. Yeah, I know. That's perfect timing. Yeah.
And
Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg is
too funny again.
He's too self-aware. Like, he couldn't do it. And I think he'd be great because he's such a terrible dramatic actor.
That's what I liked about it.
Yeah, and I just don't like Taylor Lautner very much. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, Taylor Lautner's tough. But, that's the thing. That's the thing about Dalton. It's tough to replace Swayze.
Yeah,
he's a very Swayze-centric type of guy.
Yeah, and it's a weird character.
Yeah.
And, you know, we compare it to Westerns and, like, Seagal, but you couldn't put a Seagal-like person in this role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you couldn't.
It's tough.
Yeah, I don't know who I'd like to see. Maybe, probably somebody that's never done an action movie, you know, like somebody that sort of played that type of character, not in an action movie.
Okay.
Like, think about, you know, Swayze and Dirty Dancing and then him being cast in this.
Yeah.
Like, that type of thing. Which I guess Taylor Lautner is kind of a good option for that way
well,
of thinking.
Well, he's done whatever that Bourne ripoff
was. Yeah, that nobody saw. It doesn't count. Abduction doesn't count. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any ideas off the top of my head.
Okay. Wade Garrett?
Sam Elliott.
Too old, too mustachioed.
You can't replace Sam Elliott.
I know.
I refuse.
The best I could do is Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman could do it. He's not old enough, though.
He could put a graying wig.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
Him
fair enough. Fair enough.
He's jacked enough, and people like him.
I think Gosling would love to play Dalton.
Yeah,
I think he would love it.
Yeah.
But he would know exactly what he was doing.
That's
though.
The problem. Yeah. He would make an awesome Dalton.
Yeah.
Doc?
Doc.
Sexy Doctor?
It could be anybody.
I say Katherine Heigl for her blonde hair and her medical experience. She has an acting PhD. So
that's
she
true.
Gets the pass. Yep. Wes Bradley. Or whatever. Mafia McGee.
Mafia McGee, yeah. Brad Wesley.
Brad Wesley, yeah. Whatever.
See, that's the thing. This guy was so good. Brad Wesley's so good. And then, this is a tough movie to recast because everybody nails it.
Yeah. I have one I think you might like.
Okay.
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, my God.
Because as crazy as he is, I don't think he's self-aware. Like, I don't think he knows what he's doing yet. I really think he's just free-falling.
I think he does know what he's doing, and he doesn't care. I think
okay, that's how that works, too.
Nicolas Cage's approach to life is, I love what I'm doing, but I don't care what I'm doing it in. He loves acting, and he loves playing dress-up and all that stuff, and yeah. Which is what he's doing in The Sorcerer's Apprentice, and he loves movies where he can chew scenery. Which is correct in that he would be perfect for Brad Wesley. He would kill in this role.
Okay,
it would be like him as Castor Troy again. You know, like,
yeah.
It would just be amazing.
With more scarves.
Yeah. Less Tic Tacs in a suitcase or something.
Yeah, I'm glad you like that one. Hedo Turkoglu has already been established.
Yeah.
Hedo Turkoglu, whose name we haven't even said.
because it is Hedo Turkoglu, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's got, the paunch like Hedo, the hair.
Larry the Cable Guy plays both fat guys.
Oh, of course.
But that's not even a question.
Yeah, no.
Jeff Healey? My choice is Jack White.
Okay.
It seems like something Jack White would do.
Yeah.
And we know he can wail and play blues.
Yeah.
And I feel like he'd want to play a blind dude for some reason.
It seems like, I mean, it's more an authentic way of playing the blues probably to him somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And he'd bring a lot of good hats to the movie.
Exactly. A movie that, I mean, it could always use more hats. And we know he's got the arsenal of good hats.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I could totally see him wanting to do this.
Yeah.
Approach him with the road this one. He'd be down. And I think he'd do it sincerely.
I think he would know that this movie is kind of a joke.
And, yes.
But I'm gonna play into this. You know,
yeah.
Like, I'm gonna do
play
this
it
right.
Straight. Yeah. My director choice was U-Bull.
Yeah, I think that's too far.
But I think he does it with sincerity and it ends up being funny.
But it's too bad. Like, he's really bad.
Yeah.
Like, technically, this movie is better than a U-Bull movie, like, as far as cinematography and stuff like that. Okay. Like, it's not great, but
it's the guy who did Jurassic Park, eh?
It's totally passable. What do you mean?
The cinematography.
For real?
Yeah.
That's funny. But yeah, Roadhouse technically is not, like, a visual failure or anything.
So who directs, though?
I know. It would have to be somebody that's sort of, like, somebody who I'm aware of, but not most people. Like, it can't be like a Michael Bay, you know? Like, it can't be a blockbuster action director. It has to be like one of the guys that directs Statham movies, you know?
Trying to prove himself still.
Yeah. You know, like Simon West or something, you know? who did, like, he's working on The Expendables 2. He did The Mechanic earlier this year, and, like, something like that, who is not talented, but, like, not especially talented, but makes serviceable movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right, so we'll call those people.
And I assume that they're just using the same exact same script.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's what I will. I would. I do not want them to change it at all. Yeah. I think that would be the best. Because obviously no one's going to do this. And it would really be tough to take something that people laugh at and try to walk the line between doing it seriously enough to still get those same kinds of laughs and making it a complete farce.
Well, they're remaking Point Break.
Yeah? Mm. I don't know what that means because I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that means that the Swayze action hero is not beyond reboot, basically.
Awesome.
Yeah. So.
So we're going to see more Swayze in the future.
Well, you know.
Well, fake Swayze.
Return of
faux Swayze.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now that I know what Patrick Swayze is all about, I can actually look forward to that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, thanks for listening to our podcast, and we need some music to play us out. So Travis, play something with balls.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. This episode has been brought to you by Listerine's revolutionary new mouthwash, thumbtacks, whiskey, and acid. The perfect elixir to both freshen your breath and make you sound like Christian Bale's Batman all at once. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.